This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin. You're tuned into the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. The term upcycling may not have reached the popularity of recycling yet, but the awareness of it and what it stands for has increased a lot more these days. There are various ways one can start upcycling or repurposing unwanted goods into something new that's practical and sometimes aesthetically pleasing. For Shahzah Saifuddin, her area of focus is on old retro furniture. Combining her background in interior design, the awareness of the importance of upcycling, especially in relation to the environment, and her sharp sense of contemporary style, Shahzah embarked on a project that is now known as Shahzah of All Trades. Using this platform, she refurbishes old furniture and sells them to customers who are interested, provides consultation as a freelance interior designer, and even engages with her fans and followers on Instagram on a regular basis to answer their questions and curiosities regarding the world of old furniture and interior design. She joins me on the show this week to share her journey.
Okay, so my name is Shahzah. I'm an interior designer. I started doing freelance back in, I would say, 2017. But I actually got into it quite seriously starting 2018 and until now. So I do a lot apart from interior designing. I do a lot of furniture refurbishments, and I just have a really deep interest, I guess, for vintage furniture.
Okay, has that always been your interest? I mean, growing up, did you always have like this interest towards refurbishing furniture, or just furniture, or interior designing in general?
So I live with my grandfather, and he has always kept a lot of things that he had when he was younger. So I was, like, in a way, exposed to different things that were from different eras compared to when I was growing up. And the things that I saw was that he had a few trunks that he had when he was studying abroad, and all those things, I guess, just, it's very interesting to me because it's not something that I see in the stores, you know. And then when I was younger, I was also very, I don't know if it's something that's different than, I am pretty sure a lot of other girls are also interested in this. I was very interested in dollhouses and Polly Pockets when I was growing up. So I wouldn't know if, I just like to see how things go together. And I guess it started from there, I would say.
So apart from, I guess, having a keen interest in interior design, you also try to refurbish things, right? So is that why you've decided to call yourself Shahzah of All Trades?
Actually, I started that name because after I graduated, a lot of my friends, they were quite certain on what they wanted to do. They wanted to go in a firm, and some wanted to be a specialist and things like that, become a lecturer. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I like doing a little here and there. You know, I wanted to get into lecturing, but I also wanted to do some freelance work. I like things that don't necessarily belong, I would say, in the ID industry, like DIYs and crafting, which was something that interested me since I was young. So I was always under the impression that I like the name because it means that you're not tied to one thing that you're good at. You're like the saying is like jack of all trades, master of none, sometimes better than master of one, right? So yeah. I kind of like the idea of doing different things, and just, it just seems right for me at the time. So and somehow it I guess it stuck lah. So
What about upcycling? Is that something that you want to champion while doing what you're doing? Because I think a lot of people sometimes can be more focused on just thinking about designing things rather than, you know, thinking about upcycling, right? Yeah. So how did the awareness about upcycling come about?
Well, it started off with, I guess, my dad. He wanted to sell a few of our stuff online because it was still in good condition, and I feel like it would be a waste to just throw it out. So we tried to sell it, and when we were in the process of selling our things via Carousell, I saw a lot of things that were, I wouldn't say they're broken, they're just a little bit flawed, like maybe the hinges were a bit loose, or maybe the structure was there, but the color wasn't as appealing. So I thought, yeah, maybe why are people selling off these things? You know, like why are they threw, or some even had the intention of throwing it away. So I was thinking, like, why are these people wanting to throw these really nice things away? Maybe they just didn't see the potential in them, you know? So I just tried to look for things that were on the cheaper side. It was just basically an experiment, because I just finished my master's then and I didn't know where to go and what to do at the time. So I just took on a few furnitures from Carousel that were like on the cheaper side. So I painted it, I fixed it up, and I was just thinking that these things were not salvaged and they would just be in like a landfill, and that would be such a waste, you know. They're in good condition and there's so much potential, and it's also on the cheaper end of the price spectrum, I would say. So whenever I have clients now, I just tell them that if they have a certain budget they need to stick to, maybe they can look into the option of getting something that's upcycled or like pre-loved, because I really think that you're doing the environment a favor as well by not massively producing new things and then throwing it out. And usually these older things, they're built to last. So yeah, I guess that's why I am such an advocate for older things.
I guess the unique thing about your approach is that it's not just a straight up repair job, right? Like, for example, if you have a furniture, you just repair it to its original condition and then you sell it off, right? I guess your approach also involves, I guess, restyling them. Yeah. And yeah. I think that concept is quite interesting, because sometimes in order to restyle and slightly change the vibe of certain furniture, you have to have a sense of awareness and sense of style as well, right? So how did you develop and cultivate that kind of thing? Yeah. How did you cultivate and develop that sense of style?
I guess it's very, again, I think with style, it's very personal, right? So it's really, I mean, even me and my sister, some of the things that I do, my sister are not so keen on, but I guess it's just a matter of exposing yourself to different styles, either online or watching some. Usually what I do is I look up on Pinterest or I look into movies that have interesting settings and things like that. I mean, like in TV shows and magazines. I mean, nowadays, not so much magazines, because I guess the print media isn't doing that well as it had been in the past. But then just being exposed to a lot of information, I would say. So I'm just very, very fortunate that I was exposed to these things since I was young. And I guess over time, when you're used to seeing all these things, you kind of pick up, I mean, quite immediately, even when you travel and you see a lot of things in the waiting room or in boutique. So I guess over time, I just kind of develop. I don't know if it's called a style that I have, but it's just that something that I can somewhat predict will look good on something, you know?
Yeah. And the interesting aspect about, I guess, developing a sense of style is also to keep up with trends, right? So is that something that you have to also be mindful of, in the sense that you have to somehow, I guess, predict what will be quote unquote trendy, like in 3 months time or in 6 months time and things like that?
Yeah. So what I usually do is when I have a furniture that is more on the retro era, I would say I first of all look on how it would look like originally, how people at the time styled it. And then nowadays, since, again, like era, it's something, I guess trends is something that keeps on repeating, right? So there's a lot of retro elements that are coming up now, but with, you know, a more modern twist, I would say. So you just have to like do a lot of research. Like, I guess it's a guessing game. It's like, it's a guessing game, but also it's something that you have to have knowledge of so that it would be like a validated guess, I'd say. It's something that you can predict that would look good, because again, it's a business, right? So if it's something that you alone think it's nice, but not a lot of people think it's nice, it's not something that's good for business.
Yeah, and speaking of it being a business, you have to also appeal to a certain demographic, right? So how would you describe your kind of demographic? Yeah. So who are your customers?
Okay, so my customers are usually people between the late 20s to like early 40s. So that would be the demographic that are usually keen on what I'm doing, mainly because the younger demographic, they're interested because they're more, this is also from what I can find out, but usually the younger ones, they're more aware that these are environmentally conscious options that they can opt for when they have houses, and usually because they have rentals, so they're focused on things that are a little bit on the cost-effective side. But for the older generations, some they're really interested because they've seen it when they were young, but they've never seen it done in a way that's modern. So like, for instance, I had a telephone chair where people back then used to put their phone that were connected to the landline, and the younger generations was just losing their mind because they didn't know what it was for, and they were so shocked to know that there was a furniture designed specifically for a landline. And I guess nowadays not a lot of people have landlines anymore, but then the older generations just really like it for the nostalgic purpose, I guess. So like my customers that are, I guess, late 30s, 40s, 50s, they're more into the nostalgia of things, and the ones that are like on the younger end, they're more in it for the environmentally conscious factor, for the, I guess, even the look, because I would say the younger demographic, they're into things that look more unique. So again, I guess that's how my demographic is.
That's quite interesting. Do the older generation kind of accept? Are they able to accept the kind of style that you, I guess, furnish your furniture with? A bit more contemporary, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Most of them do. Some of them were a little like, oh, like I didn't think that it would look that way. So far, mostly they're good responses, but I guess some of them were a little, they were wondering why I would want things that were from the past. I guess they have the preconceived notion of, oh, it's in the past, so why would you want to bring it back? But most of them were good responses, I would say.
That was Shaza Saifuddin, or more commonly known as Shaza of All Trades, sharing her efforts upcycling old furniture into something new and trendy. We're going for a short break. Stay tuned. I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and this is I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharuddin. This week, I'm joined by Shaza Saifuddin, an interior designer that adopts upcycling old furniture as her main approach for her initiative, Shaza of All Trades. Earlier, she shared the story of how she started, the kind of customers she has, and the popularity of vintage and antique furniture. Continuing on that, I asked her whether there is a possibility for this trend and demand for upcycled furniture to be oversaturated in the future. Here's her answer.
I guess it can, because nowadays a lot of companies, bigger companies are also, because they're seeing the trend of it coming back, a lot of bigger companies are doing it, producing it in a mass production kind of way again. So, but it's, I guess it can be oversaturated. Yes, it can definitely when bigger companies take over. But as of now, the bigger companies that are trying to make it in the quality that it was back then, it will cost them a lot more money. So again, I think over time and all these older things, they're getting harder and harder to find because a lot of people are buying it, I guess. So yes, it can be overly saturated. I can see it happening, but at the same time, there's a bigger cost to it than just the aesthetics. So I'm really hoping that people would see that how and why I'm doing these refurbishments to support the smaller businesses who are selling, but also yeah, just to, it's a good cause for the environment, yeah.
So do you actively look for furniture to be refurbished and then sell, or do you now have a different approach to, I guess, conducting this business model?
For now, I'm still looking for older furniture that I can refurbish, but also because of COVID and MCO, I'm trying to be more mindful of the places that I go to. So I would say the trips are getting a little bit tricky to do because I just wanted to be safe. And since I meet so many people and some of them have kids, I just, since I'm also like, I do a lot of interior designing work, and part of that is meeting different people, and most of them have family. So I'm just trying to be responsible in the sense that I know who and where to meet people, and just try to lessen my chances of getting in contact with people that are, you know, because these places that I go, sometimes they're not the most clean places out there. And I just wanted to be more responsible in that sense. But now that the numbers are going down, I'm going to start looking into, I've called some of my friends who's selling older furnitures. So we'll see how things go for now.
So how do you execute all your projects? Do you do everything yourself, or do you have collaborators helping you out with things?
I definitely don't do a lot of things myself because since I'm a freelancer, I do a lot of things on my own. If I do design work, I'll do the designing, and I contact my friends who are contractors, and they will then do like a collaborative project with me. If it's something that's refurbished, I would pick out most of the things. Well, say if I have a chair, and I'll source out the chair, if it needs some fabric, then the fabric. And I just have a talk with my carpenter to tell him what I want, what colors that I think would look good, and how they think, if it's even possible to fix up. So because some things are harder to fix than others, right? So I'll just talk to them and just have a chat on how I would want it to look like, and then they will also tell me what is possible and what is not, and then they'll do it out for me. I don't do the refurbishments on my own. It's mainly my idea, and I ask someone else to do it.
So what was that process like in terms of, I guess, collaborating for others? Is it difficult for you to get people to understand the ideas that you have?
Well, I just try to ignore whenever they question me, and I'll just say, oh, can you just please do it? And then they will usually be very surprised with the outcome because, again, with different people, they have different skill set, right? I just think that maybe lucky for me, I can imagine a lot of things before it actually happened. So whenever my carpenter questions like, oh, cantik ke? And then I'll be like, oh, cantik kot, boleh kot. So they'll just do it. They trust me enough to just do it. So whenever it's done, they'll be like, oh, sebenarnya cantik juga kan? I'm like, yeah. So yeah, I guess that's how you collaborate lah. You just have to have trust between two people, right?
Apart from, I guess, doing this, you're also quite active on social media, and you tend to do a lot of engagements with your fans and followers as well, right? Is this one of the best ways to, I guess, disseminate information and also learn a thing or two from your followers as well?
Yeah, I would say that the reason why I do a lot of sharing sessions and interaction on social media is because I want a two-way communication. I wanted to know what they need and what they're curious about. So on my end, I can educate them on how things actually are, because usually when I'm with my clients and they really don't have any idea of how things go and how things work. So I guess I just want people to understand where I am coming from as an interior designer, because a lot of people are intimidated by interior designers. So, and some, they cannot afford to hire interior designers, which I understand. So I just wanted to, on my end, I just wanted to know what they're curious about and what the market segment is. And on their end, I guess they want to know from an insider what the in and outs of the interior design work is like.
Some people also have the perception that sometimes the more antique and retro furniture looks like, the more you have to pay, right? And that's not necessarily the case, right?
No, that's not true. Yeah, because sometimes if you're lucky, you can get really good scores. And the whole thing is an experience, right? So you need to actually do your research, do the scouting. And of course, it will take a longer time. And if you have the means to do it, I guess people have different levels of either time or money or interest or style. So you just need to work with what you have, right?
Yeah, and I guess the perception that sometimes you have to spend a lot to have a decent looking living room is not necessarily true, right?
Yeah, that's not true, because even the higher end shops, they have warehouse sales and clearance and things like that, and they sell their display piece for much less. You just need to know the information and how to get them, because I've had customers who paid as little as 100 ringgit for something that was supposed to be 900 or 800. So again, all these things, it's luck, and also it's luck, it's doing research, and also asking the right people for the right things, you know.
And I guess in your attempt at trying to make interior design a bit more accessible, do you feel like it's worth it to share information publicly without, I guess, because based on your profession, you can easily choose to be consulted and get paid for it, right? Yeah. So, are you aware of those things, or you don't care so much about, you know, I guess getting paid for your job, and the priority is more on making sure that people get the right information, you know, for free?
Yeah, because there are things like for me, if I want to do things that are personalized, say they want me to comment on their house or like do a consultation on their house, then I would ask for payment, because I think that's fair, because it's my time and it's my billable hours to actually, that's part of my work. But if you're asking me to, you know, just like simple questions like where to get this or where to get that, I don't feel like it's an information that I should hold back from others, because it's not mine to keep. I always feel like when you have information and when you have knowledge, especially, it's for you to share. Mm. So it's not yours to keep. You cannot say that, oh, I'm an interior designer, so I know this much. So even ask simple things like, the most basic questions, you would have to pay me. I guess it depends, but like for me, I don't think that all this knowledge that I know is meant for me to keep and just know on my own. I feel like if there are other people wondering, I should tell it to them, because at one point I didn't know about it either. So yeah, I guess that's where I stand now on this.
You mentioned how the MCO and the pandemic somehow, I guess, disrupted a bit of your work just now. So what do you think the future of upcycling is going to be like in the future? I guess there are existing perceptions that people have towards old furniture. But do you think that these kind of things, especially the pandemic, will somehow exacerbate the perception that people have towards old furniture? You know, do people get suddenly a bit more paranoid about, you know, buying old furniture because maybe potentially, you know, there's virus or germs there and things like that?
There was always something that a lot of people have been scared about is, oh my god, it's very old, like how would I know that it's clean? But whenever I do my upcycling, when it's other people's furniture, I always change everything. So if it's a chair, then I'll change the sponges, and if it's the wooden part, the timber part, I'll sand it down and restain it again. So basically, they're not old. And they are old in age, but in terms of finishes, usually I change everything up to make sure that it's in a sound condition to be sold. So some people get it, some people don't. But I think with COVID, people are going to be more careful. So I guess I would have to think of more things to ensure that my work and the furniture that I sell are in good condition.
And lastly, what are your future projects?
At the moment, I'm working on some sort of like a model to get, so that I'll be able to take other people's furniture and refurbish them, because at the moment, I focus on my interior design work only. And if I do restoration work, it's mainly for the things that I find. So I'm getting a lot of inquiries of people saying that they want me to do up their furniture as well. So I'm coming up with a, I would say like a business model that would benefit us both lah. So that I'll be able to fix up their furniture and yeah, we'll see how things go from there.
Okay, and for people out there who would like to follow your development and also know more about what you do, where can they go to find you?
You can look up Shaza of All Trades, that's S-Y-A-Z-A of All Trades, over on Instagram.
You've been tuning in to I Love KL, and that was Shaza Saifuddin, the person behind Shaza of All Trades, an initiative that champions the upcycling of old vintage furniture. That's all we have for this episode of I Love KL. If you miss any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl, our app which you can find via Google Play and the App Store, and also Spotify. Don't forget to also follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharuddin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Remember to maintain physical distancing and stay safe. Join us again next week, only on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.